When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Abusers in Hollywood are as old as the Hollywood sign itself. And while fame is the ultimate prize in Tinseltown, underneath it lies a shroud of mystery. Binge this season of Variety Confidential from Variety, Hollywood's number one entertainment news source and iHeart podcasts. 6 episodes are waiting for you right now to dive into the secret history of the casting couch, to explore the scandalous history of Hollywood's casting process. Listen to Variety Confidential on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, quick disclaimer at the top. In this conversation with Jordan Harbinger, there may be strong language that is not appropriate for all members of the audience. We immensely enjoyed this conversation, and we hope that you do too. Just wanted to give you a quick heads up. With that in mind, let's dive in.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codename Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you, you are here. And that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. Folks, opening question, what's the strangest place you've ever visited? How did the reality jibe with your expectations? Here's another fun one. Have you ever spoken with a spy? If you have ever considered any of these questions, fellow listeners, then oh boy, do we have something special for you today. We are joined with the author, lawyer, thought leader, world traveler, the creator of the Jordan Harbinger Show, the one and only Jordan Harbinger. Jordan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on. Although I technically have not written anything that has ever been published. Well, that's not true. I published some stuff on blogs. That makes me an author, right?
Yeah,
my own blog.
I think you're good to go, man.
You ever written like a note on the back of a cocktail napkin? You know,
yeah, for sure.
Whatever you got.
I mean, you authored that.
Mostly just, yes, phone numbers mostly, but that counts. I mean, somebody had to write it down.
I got to ask you really quickly, have people ever asked you, like, if your last name refers to being the harbinger of, like, the apocalypse or doom like that?
No, okay. One's ever like, this is a harbinger of a good time. There's a negative connotation to it. And I've always wondered, I'm like, who came up with that? It's some metal band came up with it probably in the 70s, and it was just like, you're never going to have anybody think that you're good when you walk in the room. That's how it is now.
Now we have to thank you for the nominative determinism there, right? Like how someone with the last name Toothman may be a bit more statistically likely to be a dentist. One of the first questions we had to ask you, Jordan, Is it weird for you to be on the other side of an interview conversation, given that you have interviewed so many people over the course of your career? I think it's a little early to check in and say, how we doing, man? But is this a good experience for you to be on the other side?
So far, so good. Yeah, except for that author thing. I don't know what you guys are thinking with that one. But beyond that, this has been great. Yeah, I actually enjoy interviews where I'm the subject because I realize I didn't have to read a book in preparation for this one. I just had to show up, which is nice. That's I've got that going for me, which is – so if a toothman is more likely statistically to become a dentist – Am I more statistically likely to be like the Antichrist or something? Because if so, I might have to leave a little early. Got some planning to do.
Prophet of the end times, perhaps. You know, I don't know.
Well, guys, you know, housekeeping note: English, especially the dialect we speak here, is a living language. So it's really up to us what that surname will mean, right? And this is. We were working on so much research because there are so many questions we want to get to in today's interview. A lot of people may not be fully aware of your background, Jordan. You started in law school. We're talking, you are a fellow alum with our producer, codenamed Doc Holliday. And it was startling to me that during your time in law school, you launched your first podcast. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, I launched my first show, which shall remain nameless because they always try and sue me when I mention them, even if I don't say anything bad.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, that's what happens when you do a show for 11 years and you're like, I want to change everything about this business. And then your business partners are like, no, but also you're fired because you want to leave. You can't leave. You're fired. It was literally that. And I was like, well, okay. And then I was sad, but then I was like, wait a minute. This is the best thing that ever happened to me. But yeah, I launched the first podcast was in 2006, the one that I did, the first podcast I did, it was 2006. It was like November, December.
That's not far off from the first podcast kind of era right there.
Ever. You know? Yeah. Yeah. I do look back now and I'm like, man, only it was like me and Adam Curry and a couple of other people that are probably still in business this week in tech or whatever, those guys. And that was it. I mean, it was kind of exclusively nerds only. Now it's like only maybe 90% nerds, maybe 95, I think. So we're really just running the gamut of expanding here in podcasting.
Well, yeah, and we're the old How Stuff Works crew of the nerdy website guys. We've been like 16, 15 years doing that nerd stuff.
Oh, geez.
I think it's really cool.
No one tell our bosses we get paid. As soon as accounting finds out, it's over for us, guys.
We were just at a podcast conference and someone made the joke of like, we were in podcasting back before it was cool, to which someone replied, it's still not cool.
Yeah.
no kidding. Which is fine, but it's a living, that's for sure. But
You can get a lot of cool people to talk with you if you're making a really cool show. Uh-huh. And in your case, like it's what you're using your time to do. You're making the world a better place by getting insight from these people you speak to, man. Some of the conversations you've had. There's one in particular that was just teased at the end of an episode where you're speaking about your time in the DPRK. And gosh, I can't even tell you off the top of my head who it was, but it was a spy, somebody who worked with the CIA to develop tech. It was one of the coolest sounding conversations, and I didn't have time to listen to it, but I can't wait to listen to it now.
Was it a woman that I was talking
yes.
to? Yeah, so I think that might have been, and I'm having a brain fart here, but she was Jonna Mendez, right? So she
yes.
was the head of the CIA's, I can't remember exactly, but they have to do with costumes and technology. Yeah. And she was in Moscow in the 80s. And so this is like, they're the only Americans with chief enemy in the middle of Moscow. And so they were doing things like making a car that had a person, a dummy that would pop up and down so they could trick the KGB into thinking that they had picked someone up or dropped someone off when they hadn't. It has to look super real and also has to be able to like fold down and be completely invisible when the cops inevitably say, who's in the car with you? They're like, no one. And they're like, those damn Americans, they must have let someone out of the car. So then they're on this crazy chase around back alleys of Moscow. And they're doing it to just mess with these guys so that when they do eventually need to exfiltrate someone, they're like, it's that stupid car dummy thing again. Meanwhile, there's like someone sewn into the car seat driving out of the
embassy
grounds.
Yeah, we have to point out exfiltrate for anyone listening at home, unfamiliar with the term, means to safely get an asset or someone out of the environment of operation. And I want to step back here just for a second,
sure.
Jordan. When we talked just briefly about your first few podcasts, this has all kind of culminated in the evolution of the show you do now, where you interview, as Matt just alluded to, not just celebrities, not just athletes, but actual spies, actual defectors. And I think the reason I'm using the word culmination, the reason I'm using the word evolution is because looking back, it seems to me that this has built upon the skills you have honed in your previous iterations, your previous explorations. So one of the questions that people are going to want to hear on this show, what they want to hear it answered, you as a modern Renaissance man, you have expertise in critical thinking, networking, social engineering as well. Where, and I'm sure you get this all the time, but What leads you to find a person that you want to speak to? How do you contact them? And have you ever gotten in a hairy situation doing so?
Ooh, yeah. So just you mean show booking, basically?
Mm-hmm. Like, sure.
Well, so when I was a kid, I actually got in trouble. This will surprise no one. I got in trouble all the time because I was always interested in things that were kind of esoteric / forbidden. So when I was really young, I figured out how to open those green phone boxes on the side of the road. And I made a phone that you could essentially clip in there and eavesdrop on conversations, which didn't occur to me that that was completely illegal and that I would have gotten in real trouble for that. But I started to listen to a lot of my neighbor's phone conversations for hours at a time. I was an only child and TV, you know, it gets boring, especially if your parents won't spring for cable. But listening to a neighbor talk about his divorce really was interesting. So I started to get interested in a lot of those, like, hacker, we called it freaking, right? Like the phone hacking type stuff back in the 90s.
With a PH.
PH, of course. You can't
shout out Captain
everything.
Crunch. Yeah.
That's right. Everything started the PH in that community. That's, well, everything was a F sound, right? Because of the phone. And so that was a really interesting niche for me to be in. And I really enjoyed that. But I realized after a while, I enjoyed the social engineering aspects more than the hacking aspects or the technical aspects and the engineering. And so I focused on that. And then I also realized, okay, I'm not even as interested in the security elements of the social engineering stuff. I'm more interested in the human element. And then that led to networking, which was as a corporate skill, which I knew I was going to need as an attorney, which I practiced for a little while, went to law school. And then I realized I wasn't even interested in the corporate stuff. I was just interested in the conversations. And as I started teaching this networking class at the University of Michigan to law students, I started to realize I was interested in body language, persuasion, nonverbal communication, things like that. So I still had that interest in esoteric or forbidden stuff, but as applied to social engineering or the human element. But then also, like, what am I going to do? I'm not even interested in the law. I'm interested in people. And it was like, should I just go back and get a PhD in psychology? And as I started doing the podcast to do for the course, because I wanted to record my quote unquote lectures and have them somewhere, I turned it into a show. And I was like, this is so fun. Maybe I should just do a radio show about this stuff. Went to Sirius XM Satellite Radio, kept doing the podcast. But to your question, how do I book people? Because I'm really good at staying on topic, as you can tell. I just find people that are interesting to me personally. And then I do this sort of sanity check, like, okay, what percentage of my audience do I think will be into this? And if it's less than 10%, I don't do it, because that usually means a lot. That usually means less than 30%. I'm just being kind about something that I really like. So, like, when you mentioned before, Matt, interviewing defectors from North Korea, as the DPRK, as you mentioned, I know that people are going to be interested in that because it is objectively just something we don't hear about that is interesting for a lot of people, even if people don't think they're going to be interested in it. That's kind of my rule. Is it interesting to me? If yes, what percentage of that is going to be interesting to other people, whether they know it at the moment or not? I don't want to survey and go, how many people want to hear from a defector from North Korea? Because people go, I don't care. I don't even know where that is. But then when they hear the story,
they'll say,
right, yeah, what is that? I don't care. Or like, my friend's from Korea, I think. He's not that interesting. It's like, no, no, no. how about this guy who escaped twice, you know, worked in underground stuff. Now he helps smuggle refugees. You tell the story and people go, okay, that was fucking interesting. Like, period. And so I think one of the things that I've always been good at, even as a kid, is finding stuff that people go, that exists? Holy shit. I didn't even know that existed. And then getting into that kind of stuff, but keeping it true. You know, there is a line at which, and especially true in podcasting, where it's like, aliens built the pyramids, man. And it's like, can we just keep, there's enough true shit that's interesting in the world. We don't have to just make stuff up anymore. Like, that's not
only that, if you find that gateway in with the big, you know, like explosive kind of entry point, you're going to have people that are going to branch out and ask more questions, yeah, even after they leave the interview. And I think that's sort of like a low key way of educating people, you know, when they maybe don't even realize that's what's happening. And I think that's why podcasting can be great. If you can pull people in with something that's larger than life, then sometimes they leave knowing about the nuances of international affairs or something that maybe they wouldn't have, you know, dipped their toe in otherwise.
Yeah, I agree. I think I call it hiding the broccoli. You know, I have little kids. If I want to get them to eat broccoli, they'll do it now. But certainly in the beginning, it's like, how about this cheesy cover? Don't worry about it. You know, like, okay. Yeah, yeah. And you're feeding it to them and they're just eating it because they think it tastes like Cheese Whiz or whatever, because I'm a terrible parent. But I do that with the audience too, where it's like, oh, that people really do need to learn about networking. It's good for your career. But if you tell a bunch of 20 and 30 and what, even 40 year olds, hey, we're going to teach you networking, they're like, and fuck off. Right. Like, they don't right. care. They're not interested. Click the channel, change the, but if I'm like, this is a spy who's going to teach us about how they develop assets. And then that person tells you exactly what you would do if you were a lawyer trying to develop new clients, except for it's in the context of, and there I was in Afghanistan with the head of the Taliban, local Taliban. It's the same stuff. It's just told and taught in a much more interesting way than someone who's like, and then put them in your CRM system after you get their business card. It's the same set of skills. Yeah.
Jordan, I'm going to call this interview Hide the Broccoli, because I think that's a great title for us. And there's full disclosure, all the cards on the table. One of the things I know we're very excited to speak with you about is your expertise in something that's often termed dark tourism, for lack of a better word. And, you know, there are a lot of locals and state institutions in those destinations who find that term objectionable. But one of the things that really stood out to us, to Matt Noll and myself, is your experiences in the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, known as North Korea to Westerners. And there was a line you had in, I think it's episode 435, first of a two-parter. You and your colleague Gabe are, yeah, you have this beautiful line where you say, yeah, man, anytime someone has to tell you how democratic their country is in the name, it's a little bit of a signal. But let's talk a little bit maybe about what people mean when they say dark tourism in general, and what drives you to explore those sorts of places.
Yeah, dark tourism, I don't have a formal definition, but it's essentially when normal people say, I'm going on vacation, usually they mean they're going to hit up a resort in the Maldives and go scuba diving. They're going to hit a beach in Hawaii or go on a food tour of New York City and see the Statue of Liberty. Maybe some of your more adventurous friends are going to a resort somewhere in Turkey, right? But most people, just given the statistics, are not going, I'm going to get a visa that I have to bribe someone at a bar in China, and then I'm going to go to North Korea and do a tour of all these that has minders and that you're not allowed to talk to anyone on, you know, who's not in your group, and go on this very controlled optics tour of North Korea, where they have, it's not even the least visited country in the world. I think that's going to be some other smaller place like Tonga, but it's going to be up there.
Island.
The Sentinel Islands, although I think that's technically part of India or Sri
yes,
Lanka.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. Yeah.
And, but yeah, most people don't go there. And like, if they do go on a tour of another place in Africa or in certain parts of Africa, they're not going to Djibouti, right? They're not going to some of these sort of really sketchy type places that have an active or not super active war zone. They're not going to Eritrea. They're not going to try and walk across the border of Eritrea into Ethiopia. Like, none of that stuff. And yet I used to, before having two kids, really enjoyed that stuff. I still have a little bit of a, I guess you'd call it like a dark tourism boner for those places. But I also just, I've come close a couple of times, and I've seen, you see the news where people go, oh, it won't happen to me. And then they end up, it happens to them. Or just even worse now, people going to China and getting arrested because they're Canadian and Canada's holding the princess CEO of Huawei. And so some guy is spending 4 years in an absolute hellhole because he has the wrong passport and Xi Jinping wants to send a message, or the Chinese Communist Party wants to send a message. And I'm like, I can't afford to do that, because now it's
hostage,
not just like
diplomacy.
Yeah, it's not worth it. You know, it's just not worth it. When you're in your 20s and you're quote unquote invincible, sure, you can go someplace and you're probably not going to step on a landmine, and who cares? But now I'm not trying to get blown up or kidnapped or show up on CNN wearing a blindfold or any of that stuff now.
We're going to pause here for a word from our sponsors, hopefully not state sponsors, and we'll be back.
Abusers in Hollywood are as old as the Hollywood sign itself. And while fame is the ultimate prize in Tinseltown, underneath it lies a shroud of mystery. Binge this season of Variety Confidential from Variety, Hollywood's number one entertainment news source, and iHeart Podcasts. 6 episodes are waiting for you right now to dive into what lies beneath the glitzy image of Hollywood's golden age and all the sex, money, and murder that's been swept under the rug for decades. Using the Variety archives, each episode offers a rare glimpse into little-known casting couch stories that have long lived in the shadows. So join us as we navigate the tangled web of Hollywood's secret history with host Tracy Patton, along with expert Variety reporters and correspondents, as they discuss the secret history of the casting couch to explore the scandalous history of Hollywood's casting process. Listen to Variety Confidential on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I am the ferryman.
In the shadows of the afterlife, the ferryman of souls guides America's most influential spirits to their eternal rest.
You've been looking for me, yeah?
Where are you taking me?
Are you death?
This road is not on any map.
How much for a ticket?
All I ask for in payment is a tale.
These are the tales that shaped the nation.
I don't know who got to Kennedy first.
And the devastation those first bombs caused.
Then I told them they were drinking cyanide.
Featuring the voices of Wes Studi.
At least 4,000 people died on the trail.
Martin Starr.
President Nixon called me the most dangerous man in America.
Scott Hayes.
Next thing I know, I'm standing over the bodies of Baker Morton, my pistol smoking in my hand.
And Tristan Mack Wilds.
I've never been to hell, but I know intimately the hymns of the damned.
Starring Dan Fogler as the ferryman.
This is The Passage.
Listen to The Passage now on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
And we're back with Jordan. Well, let's talk about some of the experiences you did have in the DPRK, because it is a two-part episode. What did you say, Ben? 435 and I think 439 are two episodes of the Jordan Harbinger show that you can listen to right now. It's part one and part two. Really great conversation. I want to talk about some of the common things that you noticed that exist, items, I would say, that exist in the average DPRK citizen's like home or apartment or wherever they live.
Sure.
Specifically, the speaker. Images and the speaker. I really want to just tell us about that.
Sure. So what's funny is the DPRK, North Korea is the opposite of your show title. It's only stuff they want you to know. Period. Mm-hmm. And if you find out stuff they don't want you to know, they're going to pretend like that shit is not even there. And I'll tell you what I mean in a second. So one thing that you do see that even your guides will admit is in there is every home, and this is the most Orwellian thing in the world, every home that has electricity in North Korea has a speaker in the wall and you cannot turn it off. And it broadcasts, I've asked about this, the news in quotes, air quotes, very strong, bold air quotes if you can't see me right now. And what that news is, I've asked because it sounds like an emergency. And all of the news in North Korea sounds like an emergency. And they're like, oh, it's just the news. And I'm thinking, that is an aggressive tone for the news. So I'll say, what's in the news? Oh, it's about how we're striving forward and really winning as a, you know, communist socialist paradise, and how the American imperialists are trying to get us down by doing something that probably we haven't done since 1950, whatever, the Korean War. And we're going to strive and win under the great leadership of Kim Jong-un. And I'm like, they hear that every day. That's on their speaker in the morning. It wakes you up in the morning at the time that you need to get up for work. So there's no like sleeping in, because that thing is blasting. And again, you cannot turn it off. You can turn it down, but you cannot turn the volume off. So you wake up to that. They play a little bit of music in the morning, and I've heard it because I've stayed at hotels that are in residential areas, which, by the way, have huge walls around them because you're not allowed to go out and see other areas. But you can hear it blasting in the staff quarters. And what's also very bizarre, and there's a lot of places in North Korea that don't have electricity. No surprise. We've all probably seen that graphic where it shows the South Korea, and then there's the DMZ, and then above it is just like there's a dot for where Pyongyang is, and the rest of the country is dark from space. That is very real. There's a lot of places with no electricity in North Korea. So how do their speakers work? There's vans that will roll up to villages, and they have these OG sort of bullhorn loudspeakers on top, and they play the music and the patriotic stuff and the news at a specific time every day, and then it drives to the next place or recharges the batteries or whatever. So you hear it no matter what. Even if you don't have electricity or running water or frickin' toilet, you're still getting a full dose of propaganda. And in hotels where I've stayed in North Korea that are for tourists, I'm a snooper, so I started looking around, and I noticed that on the floor there is a quarter-inch audio jack, and I'll hold up what would go in there for people that are not audio dorks like us. It's basically a giant headphone jack, so it's going to look like this, but it's the hole for this, not the actual plug. And I'm like, what is that? So I finally asked the tour guide, what is that? What is that? Do you have that in your room? And she goes, no, I don't have that. And I say, do you have a speaker in your room? And she goes, yeah, for the news. And I'm like, that's what that is. So when tourists are in there, they unplug it, But when tourists are not in there and a local is in there, they plug in the propaganda speaker and there it is. So I've always thought if I go back, I'm bringing this exact thing and maybe like a pair of headphones, and I am going to have them playing so that I can kind of hear them if I'm in the room, but not really. And maybe even just, or like record it on my iPhone or something and play it into that. But now I can't go back because I do shows like this and I'm going to end up freaking getting arrested.
I was going to ask, but sorry, Matt, what were you going
to
say?
Oh, I'm just a really quick follow-up to that. And it's please feel free to shut me down completely, guys. This is just where my mind went when I was listening to you talk about that on the podcast, Jordan. It got me thinking about the devices we have perpetually attached to our hands. And I'm thinking about what you're talking about with the human intelligence, element of intelligence. And I was just wondering if our tablets, our, you know, laptops, or all these things are devices that we have always on, constant access to things like the news, that we would consider the news and entertainment. I'm wondering if we are on some strange level trained, or I don't know a better word for it. We're so accustomed to using these devices and acclimating, to feed ourselves these things rather than it being fed to us. And so on the nose of like what we're supposed to believe and what, you know, what we're supposed to think about, we like do it to ourselves, but it's a little more under the radar of what the actual message is. It's like that movie They Live, where, you know, we're being advertised at all the time through all of our news, whether it's news, entertainment, or some combination of the two, there's advertising, right?
Yeah.
Because everything's fed through advertising. And I just wonder how much of that we are actually doing to ourselves with a more cultural message, like don't think, consume more, work some more, consume.
Yes.
I don't know. What do you think?
I'm with you on that. I was going to interrupt you and do this episode sponsored by Blue Apron, or like, but you're right. So we have consumerist culture here. I think the main difference, if you're asking, because a lot of people go, yeah, man, we're just like North Korea, but we don't even know. But the thing is, we have separate information spaces, right? We can choose. You can choose within a certain amount of reason or a certain degree what comes in on that phone. You know, you can block your notifications. You can say, I'm not going to read BuzzFeed. I'm sick of this. I'm not going to read MSNBC, or I'm not going to read Fox News, whatever you want. You can listen to podcasts like this. No one's forcing you, thankfully, to listen to like Rachel Maddow or Ben Shapiro, right? Where we can choose. We can choose. They cannot choose. The information space in a country like North Korea, or even in CCP-controlled China, frankly, they have a different information space that is completely controlled by the state, period. And there aren't other personalities that you can trust more than the state leadership, that there's not different types of information that you can consume. So, yes, we have our phones. The thing is, you are free, so in so much as you believe in free will, to turn that thing off and go, you know what, I'll turn it on in the afternoon, or I'm not going to be in my email. North Koreans literally don't have that option. Even from schooling, I've gone to schools in North Korea just to check it out, like the nice ones where the I guess you'd call them like kids of the leaders probably are attending. And we saw their little like music thing and their dance thing. And we got to ask them questions, which is through the translator and the guide. And of course, only select students could answer them. That's how that whole thing is. But we would say, what is your favorite subject? Oh, my favorite subject is poetry. And I'm like, that's so random. I wonder, like, what are you writing? She goes, oh, no, we don't really write them. We just read them and perform them. And I was like, well, that's okay. Very North Korean to like not create something of your own. What's your favorite poem? And she would deliver this like crazy passionate poem. And I'm like, this girl's really talented and loves that poem. And I'd go, what is that about? To the guide. And they'd go, what is that about? And she'd go, it's about how our great leader is going to deliver us from all of our enemies that are oppressing our country, and how amazing our country is, and how we're going to have record grain harvests. And I was like, she's fucking kidding, right? Mm-hmm. Nope. That's
nope,
what the
at all.
Poem was about. Yeah. Obviously just written by like some Stalinist propagandist
who wrote it
35 years ago.
But they were paid to do so as full time. So in a degree, you could say for a Western analog, you could say maybe when there's a single space, single information space, and I love that term, Jordan, when there's no real Overton window, right, of what is able to be discussed, everything is sponsored content and there's only one sponsor. I've got to say, like, a thing that surprised me, I've been to the border of ROK, Republic of Korea, South Korea, and DPRK multiple times. I haven't gone on the tour yet because, like you with DPRK, I probably have some customs clearing issues in PRC nowadays. But one thing that startled me, and I think it's something a lot of people miss in these conversations, is there is also propaganda on the ROK side, Korean side. Could you describe a little bit of what that experience is like for people unfamiliar?
So I don't know much about South Korea because I've actually never been there. But I would say that, which is funny because everyone's like, wait, what? You went to the hard Korea, not the easy one? That's like, why would you do that to yourself? That's more of the dark tourist. I'm like, I can go to South Korea when I'm 65. It's going to be like, I can walk over with my
entire family, the kids.
Yeah, we're going to go to South Korea. North Korea is kind of like, you do that before you have any real responsibility to come home in one piece. We definitely have propaganda over here, and I don't think anybody's sort of, well, maybe there are some people that deny that, or they try and do semantic arguments about how we don't have that. Of course we have that. If we didn't, we would have a lot more reasonable dialogue inside this country because we wouldn't be like, but freedom. It's like, terrorists don't hate our freedom. I mean, a little bit, yes, but not. That's not like the reason 9/11 happened, right? It's not because they're like, freedom sucks. that's a very small part of it, and they're not. Their definition of freedom is not the same one that we have, right? When they're complaining, South Korea definitely has. I mean, South Korea was, and this is sort of surprising for me to learn as well. That was kind of a hardcore military dictatorship all the way up until I want to say the 80s. Or even the mid-80s. And my wife's family, they're from Taiwan. And I was like, yeah, Taiwan's so free. Look at that economy. Oh, China. Up until like 89, that place was also like, don't say anything or the secret police will come to your house and throw you in prison. And it's not fair. And there's a military tribunal. And it's under like a very iron hand of the KMT party, Chiang Kai-shek type. So these are not nice places to live. And part of that is the result of what happens after a war when the war is still kind of going on, at least in the minds of the leadership and the propagandists, right? It's very much Cold War, but it's kind of like they're more 6 minutes to midnight than the US and the Soviet Union probably ever were. They're kind of in perpetual Cuban Missile Crisis level of fighting or warfare. So ROK had a lot of people that were just taught that the United States was not super beloved there because soldiers would go out and like rape girls that were on their way to school. That didn't make us look good. And that's what North Korean propaganda will say all the time. You know, the South Korean government, they're just puppets of the United States. And I was like, oh, this is so nonsensical. And then I would start reading history and I'm like, ah, okay, it's actually not that nonsensical. It's just outdated. You know, if this was from 1979, what's written in here, probably not that much of an exaggeration, except for now it's 2013 and this hasn't been going on like this for 30 years. But no one in North Korea is going to know that because they are stuck in 1955 at the latest, even in terms of dress and the way that they speak and the movies that they watch and things like that. They really don't have a lot of that. And even a lot of the technology. I was there several times. When I first went there, nobody had mobile phones, literally no one. Like tour guides from the UK who live in China, they had mobile phones that didn't do anything but call the hotel to tell them we were on our way or maybe call for some other thing. Now, when you go there, or at least as of a few years ago, quote unquote, normal people have cell phones. But I will tell you, these are like those Nokias from 2001 that have Snake on them. They can't dial out of the country. They can only dial in the country and they have sort of like, there's no internet. There's just intranet that's inside North Korea.
Yeah, but they're reliable as hell, Jordan.
Those phones? Yeah, you can put them underwater. Those ones where, you can like use them to bash your way out of a car trunk.
I was
trunk.
About to say, for self-defense.
You can staunch sucking chest wound with them. Yeah.
For sure. I got to ask you though, with all this conversation around propaganda and access and lack of access to information, without singling anybody out or anything, like here in this country, it does all this talk about, the North Korean people not having the choice, of which propaganda they would like to enjoy. It really makes me even more grumpy at the folks here in this country, for lack of a better word, to not get too heated about it, choosing the propaganda that they choose.
Yes, it just really with you.
So that's, I guess
it's worse, yeah, if you have no choice and it's being shoved down your throat at the penalty of death. It's like, you willingly listen to this idiot. What's wrong with you? Like, you're actually tuning into InfoWars because you want to. Like, how dare you? How shame on you. Come on, man.
And I listened to an episode that you did about, you know, fake news and the nature of propaganda with another CIA analyst who was very, very fascinating.
And former CIA analyst. Yeah, episode 715.
Yeah, so I just wonder, how do you correlate that with that experience that we see with fake news? And is fake news the same thing as propaganda? Are they achieving the same end results, or is one a more high, you know, high tech or like more advanced version of the other? I don't know.
I think when I think propaganda, I think more state-sponsored propaganda, but really, what is marketing and advertising if not propaganda, right, for a specific company? I mean, when we say, you know, that Casper mattress was so soft, oh, I love it, and you can get 15% off. I mean, we are basically propagandizing for, the thing is, it's transparent because the FTC in the United States is making us say, by the way, they gave me money to say this. That said, I did use it and I like it, and you could do it as well, and it'll support the show. That's a little different than saying these are the facts and there's no debate around it, and this is what the science says about this. So I am a little bit, I do understand what you mean, and I also do get a little bit, I guess, triggered is probably the best word, when I'm like, why, if you can choose to watch or listen to anything, do you choose the set of facts that's making you the most miserable and is just objectively, verifiably not true? And so it's frustrating. That's an education issue. And I think what you're saying is, in a place where you can choose to be educated about something else, why are you choosing to be ignorant deliberately in a way and then funnel something into your head? Yeah, it is frustrating. I agree with that.
I love that you put it this way, because I singled out the episode, the fake news interview from Jordan Harbinger's show, in our notes, because this is a commonality that our shows have together, the application and importance of critical thought. And this is something that I think we quarrel with. First off, Jordan, I love that you absolutely drew a very close Venn diagram between advertising and propaganda. It's sort of like, what's the difference between lobbying and bribery? That's a weird one to explain to your friends who
totally
are in the U.S.
100%.
Right. So this question, and I urge anybody listening today to check out your interview with Cindy Otis. This question is something that can be really difficult to answer for you as a student of media discourse in the modern day. What can our fellow listeners do to try to suss out the mis and disinformation from the objective communication? I'm thinking, I got to pull the rug real quick for American listeners. The Smith-Mundt Act, which for many years did not allow Uncle Sam to push propaganda onto domestic audiences, it got pulled in 2013. So if you're hearing this, it's already happened. How do people... How do you get to the truth amid all the noise?
Yeah, this is a huge topic, of course, and I'm not going to be able to do it justice like Cindy did on my show, since she's a disinformation expert, ironically, from the Central Intelligence Agency, formerly anyway. Somebody told me this a long time ago, and they really nailed it. If you think about something that you know a lot about, let's say podcasting for any one of us, and then you read an article about it in some the Wall Street Journal, but it's not written by Ashley Carman, who writes about podcasting, right? It's written by some rando journalist, and they get all these little things wrong, and you think like, oh, that's not right, or this other thing is, this big thing is not right. That's how media is with literally every other topic that you're consuming. So to believe that they got everything wrong about underwater basket weaving or whatever expert thing that you're expert in, but they definitely got it right when it comes to whether or not one side of the aisle or the other side of the aisle or this other country is doing XYZ. It's like, well, that's interesting. They're wrong about this thing you know a lot about, but you just think they're 100% right about everything else that you consume from them. So when you start to realize that they're probably equally, if not more, wrong about everything that you are not familiar enough with to criticize, then you can start looking for better material. So the rule for me is, if I read something that's an emotional headline or an emotional piece that gets me fired up in some way, it's been written that way deliberately to get that reaction out of me. So I always try and take a deep breath before sharing it, before taking action on it, because it's probably designed for the social media algorithm for shares, clicks, likes, and whatever, versus to inform me about something that is accurate.
Like, and watch the verbs, right? Slams, blasts, right?
Yeah, always. Yeah. Or owns, so-and-so owns this other person, right? And it's like, got it. That's just a YouTube hit or whatever. As a Reddit user, I love to look at an article, go into the comments, and you always, as Reddit, as it always is on Reddit, there's always somebody that's like, you'll read something that's like, semiconductor breakthrough, da-da-da, China. And then someone at the top comment is, yeah, I work in semiconductors and I have for 30 years. This is not actually a breakthrough. This is them getting to where the United States was in like 1979, except for, I bet you, just knowing what I know about semiconductors, which is like everything compared to everybody else who's reading this article, and even the person who wrote it, he's like, one in 30 of those things works out of the box. Except to test them, it would take longer than, and so you're just getting this massive explanation about how this thing that's supposed to scare Americans because China had some breakthrough and they're shipping chips to Russian weapon manufacturers. It's just like, slow down. This thing is probably garbage if it's even real, and also probably doesn't ever work. And if it does, it's going to like get cold and not work anymore. And you're like, okay, that's, I probably don't have to worry about this. You know, if I'm reading more about this over and over and over, and it seems like it's written by people that actually know what they're talking about, then I can start to worry about it. But when it's just another Tuesday on Reddit or just another Tuesday on the news, this is almost dollars to donuts, a bunch of nonsense. And then if it's a big enough subject, you can go to a place like Snopes, where people will dig and dig and dig and research and research and research, and they will debunk or at least clarify really large claims. And you'll find out that maybe 90% of it's not true, or half of it's not true, or it's completely misleading. And I like to do that. And I do that whenever I feel emotionally triggered by something, because chances are that that article or headline was written to get that reaction from me and from other people. And that makes it a lot easier. Also, people will say, how do you stay informed when you're reading the news? Aside from my little Reddit jaunts, I really don't engage in the news. And they'll go, well, but you know so much about so many different things. I read books about them, because books take years to write. Articles take 20 minutes from an AI robot now to write. And so most articles. And so if I read a book about something like semiconductors in China and the United States, it's going to be well thought out, cited. There's going to be counter arguments from other people. The reviews on Amazon are going to tell me if it's a bunch of bullshit or not. If I'm reading an article on the Daily Wire about semiconductors in China or on MSNBC in China, it's written with a certain perspective, and it's almost certainly designed to just get me to click on stuff or share it because I'm angry or scared.
We're going to take a quick moment, hear our sponsor's words, and then come back with more words with Jordan.
Abusers in Hollywood are as old as the Hollywood sign itself. And while fame is the ultimate prize in Tinseltown, underneath it lies a shroud of mystery. Binge this season of Variety Confidential from Variety, Hollywood's number one entertainment news source and iHeart Podcasts. 6 episodes are waiting for you right now to dive into what lies beneath the glitzy image of Hollywood's golden age and all the sex, money, and murder that's been swept under the rug for decades. Using the Variety archives, each episode offers a rare glimpse into little-known casting couch stories that have long lived in the shadows. So join us as we navigate the tangled web of Hollywood's secret history with host Tracy Patton, along with expert Variety reporters and correspondents, as they discuss the secret history of the casting couch to explore the scandalous history of Hollywood's casting process. Listen to Variety Confidential on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I am the ferryman.
In the shadows of the afterlife, the ferryman of souls guides America's most influential spirits to their eternal rest.
You've been looking for me, yeah?
Where are you taking me?
Are you death?
This road is not on any map.
How much for a ticket?
All I ask for in payment is a tale.
These are the tales that shaped the nation.
I don't know who got to Kennedy first.
And the devastation those first bombs caused.
Then I told them they were drinking cyanide.
Featuring the voices of Wes Studi.
At least 4,000 people died on the trail.
Martin Starr.
President Nixon called me the most dangerous man in America.
Scott Hayes.
Next thing I know, I'm standing over the bodies of Baker Morton, my pistol smoking in my hand.
And Tristan MacWilds.
I've never been to hell, but I know intimately the hymns of the damned.
Starring Dan Fogler as the ferryman.
This is The Passage.
Listen to The Passage now on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
And we're back with more from Jordan.
All right, I want to stay on this topic, and it's because I heard you name drop somebody in one of the episodes I listened to for this. Are you friends with Neil Strauss, author of Rules of the Game, a bunch of other
books? way back, yeah.
Okay, that's awesome. We happen to know him through Tenderfoot TV because of his show To Live and Die in
LA. He went to North
Korea
on the first trip that I led, actually.
That's, in 2011. This is why I want to kind of bring this together.
That sounds right.
So you and he share this interest in the kinds of games that, not really games, strategies maybe, that we can play on each other as humans to kind of hack the way our brains function, and the way we perceive people, the way we react to people, and those kinds of things. I wonder if there's anything you could share with our audience just about everyday interactions that we're having out in the world where perhaps our minds are getting taken advantage of by somebody.
Ooh, good question. Usually... This is a tricky one because, of course, this happens all the time. I mean, it's not just, you know, people say like, oh, salespeople are doing this. Okay, fine. The best people that do this are salespeople and con artists generally and your significant other. Now, they're doing different things for different reasons, or children. Children are also really good at this.
So good.
Master persuaders, master manipulators. Some do it for their own agenda. Some do it because they think they're being altruistic. They're not. Other people are doing it to destroy you because they get a perverse pleasure out of it, etc. So while there's always a different agenda or a different reason that these people are doing things, sometimes I think it's okay. And I'm obviously not talking about con artists and manipulators and things like that. I think it's okay to not have your guard up all of the time for these types of things. Humans, if persuasion was negative, we would have, those people who are able to be persuaded would have been out of the gene pool well before podcasting 100%. Technology allowed us to have this conversation, 100%. Right?
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people who avoid human interaction or they are paranoid about what everybody wants from them and things like that, it's helpful to realize that the thing that allows you in many ways to be taken advantage of, that element of trust that you tend to give to people, is actually an adaptive characteristic that's good for you. And I can't remember who I talked about this with, a couple of people, and it's been a while now, but it's actually better to trust other people. It's Malcolm Gladwell. It's better to trust other people just as you normally would in society, even if you get taken advantage of sometimes, because the benefits of being a person that can develop and maintain trust in relationships is actually, those actually far outweigh the downside. Now, look, if you get murdered by a serial killer, I know that's dark, but like these are we're talking about dark consequences. That's bad. You know, so you do have to have some common sense about you. I'm not saying hitchhike around because you'll save on gas and probably nothing's going to happen to you. What I am saying is there's a lot of folks out there that will be like, you can't trust anyone. You got to go into a relationship with a default, you know, zero sum kind of mindset. And you really should not do that. You should actually be more, most people should be more trusting than they are. Even though you will get taken advantage of, that is a fact of life, the social network that you build, the friendships that you create and maintain, the opportunities that you find will actually outweigh, if you trust people and maintain those relationships, will outweigh the damage you suffer as a result of not doing so. And I think that is, while sort of meta in 30,000 foot, it's a really important point, because Neil Strauss and I, we used to be like, oh, you got to do this and that and body language and nonverbal communication and this and that, and you can tell if they're lying. None of that really was, that was all added up to like 5% of human interactions or 1% of human interactions. And the big hack was confidently creating and maintaining large networks of friends and allies, because that will take you much further than like knowing the right thing to say or like mastering hypnosis techniques. All that stuff ends up really coming together to make you kind of a weirdo. And yeah, I think him and I both came to that conclusion early.
It can be self-limiting. What's that old proverb? If you want to travel fast, go alone. If you want to travel far, go with others. I'm paraphrasing. Yeah. But this leads us to something else that I think is probably one of the, speaking of meta, Jordan, one of the underlying missions of both of our endeavors here in good old podcast land, and that is the exercise of critical thought, which just like physical exercise can be challenging at times, right? Like our brains want us to find stuff that already confirms what we agreed with earlier.
Yeah.
Sometimes you don't want to show up to that gym of discourse and thought. When you talk about critical thinking, I think a lot of people throw the term around, right? Sometimes for good, sometimes for ill. Certainly subreddits love it, right? But one of the questions that I have for you is, what is your philosophy regarding critical thought? And how would you say, not to trick you into a crash course for us, but how would you say people can start applying critical thought to things? What's the challenge there? What's the benefit?
Sure. So critical thinking, yeah, crash course in just a few minutes is not possible. And it's really hard to remember all these, but I would love to give a couple of things, I guess, quick tips, if you will, that I use all the time. Aside from the, when I read something and get triggered, what does that tell me? That's data that I can use. The other thing is, whenever I want to argue with somebody about something, I will try, not necessarily verbally doing this, but I will try arguing against myself. I will argue their side of the argument, and then I will try and figure out why they are right. And I'm not trying to figure out why they are right and then secretly figure out why they're wrong. I'm actually trying to figure out why they're right. Most people try and figure out why somebody else is wrong. If you try and figure out why somebody else is right, it takes down some of the guardrails in your mind about what you're allowing in as far as data. I wish I could come up with an example here, but let's say you were arguing that climate change isn't real and someone else is telling you that it is. If I'm just trying to find points that support my conclusion, that will be there, especially if I'm looking on the internet, which is not a source of truth, but more like a funhouse mirror that just confirms whatever I'm throwing at it, right?
It's just a lot wider.
Yes, it's a lot wider than a funhouse mirror. It's a funhouse mirror so wide you don't know you're looking into it because it's all you can see, right? And it's an information battleground so large you don't know you're on it, as my friend says. So arguing against yourself is great. Another thing, and this is sort of the other side of that same coin, is the steel man. So the straw man is, oh, I'm picking some thing where I can argue a semantic detail based on the worst or weakest characterization of your argument. The steel man is, let's assume, one, good intent on your part, and that all of your arguments that you say are 100% totally correct. Can I still poke holes in it without poking holes in any of your assertions? And if you can't, then you can start poking. Of course, then you start looking at their evidence and evaluating it. But a lot of times you'll find, especially if you're arguing against somebody who's just telling you something is complete nonsense, you'll find that even if you assume all their premises are correct, you can't get there. It can't be supported. And that's a stronger place to come from. If you say that person's a dick, so I don't believe anything they say, that's not even a straw man. That's ad hominem fallacy. But if we say, well, he said this, but let's admit it, that's probably not real. Come on. That's straw man, or could be considered strong man. But if I say, hey, this is, let's assume these are all correct. Well, but then he didn't even address this other thing. You're just going to leave that out. And then that's your way into this critical thinking. That gets you away from, well, I just don't like him, or those people always say that, or, well, whatever, he's an idiot, or, oh, yeah, isn't that the guy who also said other dumb thing? Screw him. You know, we do that a lot when we see arguments that we don't like, and that's the opposite of critical thinking. It's just we're trying to confirm our own conclusions, our own bias, whatever you might see. But unfortunately, we don't even often see that because that's how everyone's brain sort of naturally operates. So we are not, remember, as humans, we are evolved to keep the tribe together by thinking and acting, talking, whatever, the same way. We are not evolved to be right. That is a secondary and not even a close second kind of option. It's better for the whole tribe to be just really, really wrong, but still stick together than it is for a couple of people in the tribe to think one way and a couple of people think another way. And everyone disagrees, but some of them are right and some of them are wrong, or some are more right than others. That's how you die early in the game as a tribe that needs to stick together. So if you remember that you're actually evolved to be wrong, but stick with people that you like or that you know, like, and trust already, you can be more right because you can start to fight those instincts by using systems and techniques.
Well, and it's also like, I mean, the idea of basing every argument around why this thought leader is the devil, or why this person who has this perspective or this group are the collective antichrist. It's not about facts. It's not about logic. It's about othering. And I think that is where we get this kind of mob mentality, where you get so caught up in like the chase of it all that you don't even take a second to step back and think if any of the things that you're saying or believing make any sense.
Yes, absolutely. Because again, you're evolved not to even care if they make sense. You know, if you're in a life and death situation and there's five people around you and one person says, you know what, the guys on the other side of the island, they stole something from somebody that I know back in third grade, and we got to go over there and steal all their crap, and we're going to use that to survive. You're like, that's a sound rationale. I'm going to do that. You know, you're not thinking, well, wait a minute, actually that doesn't work. You know, it's really, really hard to do that because it's fundamentally against human nature to do so. People who are maybe more rational, balanced, like to evaluate evidence, those people died tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of years ago. Those pre-hominids were like, their brain was too active, and then they got crunched by other people who were like, just shut up and accept the party line.
This is where we have the moment together where you say there's so much stuff that we haven't gotten to yet. Jordan, we are going to have you on in the future, in the interest, again,
would love that,
of transparency and disclosure. My man, we have list of questions we have yet to touch. We might have to save them for a future appearance. In the meantime, spoiler alert, folks, you can tell we are fans of Jordan's show, and we hope you enjoy it at least some fraction of as much as we do. Jordan, where can people learn more about you, your work, and, if you are at liberty to disclose, sir, what's next on the horizon?
Sure. So it's a podcast, the Jordan Harbinger Show or Harbinger Show. I would love it if people came over there and gave it a shot. Otherwise, I'm at Jordan Harbinger on all social media, you know, Instagram, Twitter. I'd love to hear from people. I'm happy to help you find episodes you think might be interesting if you want to check out the show. Oh, I made a start page, jordanharbinger.com/start, and it has playlists of disinformation, cyber warfare, North Korea stuff, China stuff, just different topics because I know not everybody likes all the same nerdy stuff that I do. So jordanharbinger.com/start. And what's next on the horizon for me? You know, I'm always trying to figure out what would be the most interesting for my audience. I think some of the ones I'm really excited about coming up, one is with this human rights lawyer who's talking about the genocide in Xinjiang, and it's really dystopian stuff. I mean, it's really, really like an inside look at how the Chinese Communist Party, the police, they put apps on your phone so they can track your whereabouts. I mean, it is absolutely, it's North Korea, but with technology in that province of China. I also did a show with an author named Matthew Campbell, which is about how the high seas are just completely lawless and there's insurance fraud and there's piracy and nobody can do anything about it because who's going to go thousands of miles off the coast of Yemen and try and be like, that's insurance fraud. I mean, it's just really a fascinating look, and he's really on the inside
the
of all
sea
that.
Shepherd. Yes, the shepherd. The sea shepherd is here.
Exactly. Yeah. So I got a lot of fun, air quotes, shows like that on the horizon, and I'm excited about it. You know, that stuff really keeps me going. I think podcasting is just, like you said before, I can't believe I get paid for this, but I'm glad that I do.
No one tell me.
We're glad you do too, because we really enjoy it.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I'd love to come back. You guys are super fun to talk to. And I would love to do it again. Absolutely.
What a ride behind the scenes, fellow conspiracy realist. Jordan, Matt, Noel, and they call me Ben. We all ran out of time and we actually spent some time off air talking about all the stuff we didn't get to yet today. No spoilers, but I don't say this every time, guys. Really, I enjoyed that one. I've been following this guy's work as we were gearing up for this, and he's legit.
I liked speaking to him very much. Good guy, very educated, very much, what parking in our same garage, kind of, you know, conceptually speaking.
Yeah, but what Jordan does is this really interesting marketing school thing that you can take for free. I didn't know anything about it until I started listening to the show. It seems like a pretty cool concept. I'm going to look into it more. This is not a plug for that. Like, I'm not telling you to do it. I'm just letting you know I'm actually interested in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't want to speak for you guys. I checked out one of those courses, and that's part of my calculus in saying Jordan is legit and has stories to tell. He is speaking with spies. He is speaking with defectors. One person who defected not once but twice from the DPRK. So we're not blowing smoke when we say check out his show. We're also not blowing smoke when we say we want to hear from you. Where is a place you've always dreamed of traveling? What are your strange experiences, domestic or abroad? We can't wait to add your voice to the show, so help us out, folks. We try to be easy to find online.
Oh, the internet. We're all over that place. You can find us at Conspiracy Stuff, the handle Conspiracy Stuff on Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook, where we have a Facebook group called Here's Where It Gets Crazy. Get in on the fun over there. Share memes. Meet the people. Meet the realists. They're all out there, and they're waiting for you. Yes, you. We are also at Conspiracy Stuff Show on Instagram.
That's right. And if you like to use your phone to make phone calls, well, why not call 1-833-STDWYTK? That's our voicemail system. You can leave a message. Please give yourself a cool nickname, like, you know, whatever. I'm not even going to give you a concept of an idea. You just come up with something, conjure it from whole cloth, and tell us what your name is. And then you've got 3 minutes. Say whatever you'd like. Please include whether or not you give us permission to use your name and voice on one of our episodes. And if you don't want to use your phone, we get it. Why not instead send us a good old-fashioned email? We are
conspiracy@iheartradio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
Life's better with American Family Insurance because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Abusers in Hollywood are as old as the Hollywood sign itself. And while fame is the ultimate prize in Tinseltown, underneath it lies a shroud of mystery. Binge this season of Variety Confidential from Variety, Hollywood's number one entertainment news source and iHeart podcasts. Six episodes are waiting for you right now to dive into the secret history of the casting couch, to explore the scandalous history of Hollywood's casting process. Listen to Variety Confidential on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.